Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 8th of March, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here for Juneau Afternoon. Today we'll talk with Tom Cosgrove about his nearly normal road trip. We'll talk with some of the people involved in Perseverance Theatre's production of The Raisin in the Sun. Dr. Donald Stedman will be here with the preview of his talk tonight on ozone pollution. Jennifer Klein from the Juneau Lighthouse Association will be here to highlight tomorrow night's fundraiser for the Five Hanger Lighthouse. And Nancy DeTourney will be giving us the rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. And Writers Almanac, music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, looks like rain, the snow level to 1,300 feet later on, low temperatures around 35 degrees. Forecast for Friday, looks like snow unlikely with no snow accumulation expected.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. At this week's Tribal Nations Legislative Summit in Washington, Native leaders are expressing concerns about the post office's budget shortfall, which could mean closing hundreds of rural locations. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, D.C.
Andy Joseph Jr. is on the Tribal Council with the Confederated Tribes near Portland, Oregon. He says when they send mailings to their members, the Postal Service processes them 100 miles away in Spokane, Washington, before it comes back, which he says is a waste and an annoyance.
Like if we have something really important that needs to get to our membership right away, it's terrible because they just live down the street from where we're mailing it to, but they don't get it for two days later. Everybody else get it the same day.
Things could get even worse in Indian Country. The Postal Service is facing a massive budget shortfall and has identified more than 3,000 post offices that could be reviewed and potentially closed later this year. But the agency has started village post offices that are small units that can be set up in a convenience store or at a gas station in rural areas, which Postal Service Vice President Dean Granholm says could solve problems in rural communities while also saving the agency money.
It preserves the small business presence within that community and maintains a postal presence if, in fact, there is no post office today or the post office closes in the future.
The Postal Service will decide whether to review and potentially close post offices on May 15th. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
There's mixed reaction over the iron ore mining reform bill, which failed this week in the Wisconsin State Senate. The proposed area is near the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. The tribe opposes the mine. Mike Simonson has more.
Mellon Mayor Joe Barabee still hopes a compromise mining bill proposed by senators from both political parties can be passed to bring mining jobs to his town. But using strong language, he says his neighbors can't stomach the Republican-backed assembly bill.
We understand the land's going to be raped, and that's called mining, but we didn't know we were going to get raped too, and that's called the assembly bill. I'm pro-mine, but I'm not this pro-mine.
With no bill to speed up the iron ore permitting timetable, mining company GTAC says it will stop its efforts. They have not answered interview requests, although their office in Hurley remains open. Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says stopping what he calls a bill that would have destroyed their Lake Superior watershed is a credit to grassroots activism and social media.
With the tools that are here for people to communicate and share information, I don't know if GTAC and the others understood that and that people weren't automatically going to drink the Kool-Aid of jobs that they were promising.
Wiggins says they're not celebrating at Bad River. He says even if GTAC goes away, they've got lots of work to do.
This was a wake-up call, and if GTAC has gone away, the fact of the matter is the ore is still in the ground and Bad River is going to continue to build its war chest to defend itself.
Democratic State Senator Bob Jouk doesn't know if his compromise bill will be resurrected before the Senate adjourns next week, but he says a mining reform bill is needed for another company and another day. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
On this day in 1970, members of the United Nations of All Tribes occupied Fort Lawton in Washington. The base was scheduled to be turned into a park by city leaders. The takeover happened after unsuccessful tries to persuade city and federal officials to return the land to Native people. A cultural and social services center was later built at the site to help urban Indians in the Seattle area. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
I went on a road trip with my family. Two adults and two preteens in one minivan. For 14 weeks, over 10,000 miles across 25 states and two countries. 100 nights in 48 different places. Staying free some 45% of the time, due to the largesse of some four dozen individuals. We visited 22 national parks, lost 7 teeth, and played 8 gigs in 6 states. Some people thought we were crazy. Most people were really supportive, but all the parents, they thought we were brave. This trip was way too long, and not nearly long enough.
Well, that about says it all. Tom Cosgrove, thank you for crunching down your narrative into just a few seconds there.
And no problem. Good to see you, Jeff.
The nearly normal road trip.
It is truly.
10,000 miles. What made you call it nearly normal?
I created a show last year called Nearly Normal Alaskan Tales, and I have a website, Nearly Normal Alaska, and it seemed to be a theme. So it's a road trip, and it is almost normal. So there you go.
Tom's going to be talking about it this Saturday at the Downtown Public Library at 7 o'clock in a free show.
That's correct.
First of all, why did you go?
Where did we go?
Why did you go?
Why did we go? Why not? I mean, we got 3 months to take off. One of the things, Mila, my spouse, she had done this when she was a child. She had taken off on a 5-month road trip from Anchorage to Key West and back and made a huge impression on her, and she wanted to give that to her kids. So I jumped aboard, and we took some time, and went and did it, and I got to perform along the way.
Is that the onus of the trip, and just to go out and perform?
No, that was something I tacked on, as Mila told me more than once. This trip is not about you. So, it worked out.
Where all did you go?
We started in D.C., did the southeast United States, up the Mississippi River Valley, all the way to Chicago. We went through the Midwest and southern Colorado, southern Utah, northern Arizona, California, Oregon, Seattle, and the ferry home.
And you told the stories in 8 locations along the way. What kind of venues did you tell the stories in?
Oh, gosh, let's see if I can rattle this off. I did a theater. I did a museum. I did a church basement. I did a community center. I did a school. And I did a very large living room.
What was the reception?
What? Say again?
What was the reception?
Oh, it was good. I went from having a crowd of over 60 to in Moab, Utah. I had a good chunk of my family showed up, and I think we had about 5 other people from the community on that one. But every show was fun, and it was a good time.
How does the story of the telling of the story change over repeated tellings?
As you get comfortable with it, you have a tendency to take liberties. And also what I find is that truly over time it changes. There is one story I tell about my children's placentas, and it gets a great reaction here in Alaska. But that story has changed over time because I have learned more things and have had more experiences with people telling me stories. And so it has evolved, and as I get feedback from people. So it's a great, fun story to tell.
I guess I keep on wanting to know, what kind of stories did you tell besides placenta stories?
What kind of stories? Everything I do is personal experience stories. So it's all stuff from my life that I make come alive. And I tell people, somebody asked me, I said, so this is like what you did on your summer vacation? And I'm like, no. This is like sitting on your back porch on a summer night with your bachelor uncle after he's had a few snorts. It's an exploration of humor and poignant moments, and it's compelling. So, yeah.
A natural question to ask is, what did you do? But that's the subject of your storytelling this Saturday at the library.
What did I do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we did all kinds of things. I mean, I think we've got something for everyone in these stories. We've got a attack squirrels. We've got a scene of attempt of interspecies nursing. We got swimming with a Doberman pincher, and babes in bikinis. Did I already mention that one?
No, that's a good one.
So a little bit of something for everyone.
Is this a PG-8 event?
It is a PG-8 event. What I say is that it's family-friendly but may not hold the attention of those under 8. One of the things that I have experienced going out there and performing is that people equate storytelling with Itsy Bitsy Spider and preschool stuff. And really, this is not adult entertainment. I did make that mistake and use the word adult in one of the flyers, and I basically had people show up, and they were disappointed at what I actually delivered, and I lost all the families. But I use words like depreciation and pathos, and so it doesn't necessarily capture those younger children.
Now, you're telling stories about personal experiences after the show. Do people come up to you and relate their personal experiences?
Oh, that it happens all the time. As a matter of fact, that has been occurring more and more. And so at times, and if it works out on Saturday night, we actually open it up. And if people want to stand up, because going back to this placenta story, I have had people stand up and say, hey, you think that story isn't nearly as good as mine? And they stand up and tell their own placenta story, or they tell their own story, whatever they're motivated for, whatever motivates them. And it really is. Once people start telling stories, other people want to jump in, and it's great.
How long is the show on Saturday night?
It's going to run just shy of an hour, about 7 or 8 stories, all new material. So, not to be missed. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to say that probably the biggest compliment I get is from husbands that are dragged by their wives to come see me perform. And the compliment is, it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Do you call it performing?
I do call it performing. It's exactly what it is. I'm taking a story that I've written and I'm sharing it, and that's definitely a performance, an element of performance in it. I have worked with Roblin Davis here in town, who's taking me from not being a performer to learning a whole lot more about it. I can't call myself accomplished at this point, but I've learned a great deal. How you carry your body, where your body is in space, how that's communicating to the audience. These are all things I was unaware of until I started working with someone that actually knew what they were doing.
Tom Cosgrove will be telling stories about his 10,000-mile nearly normal road trip this Saturday at the downtown library starting at 7 o'clock. Get there a little bit early. I imagine it'll be quite a full crowd.
Good deal. Thanks, Jeff.
Anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I think we've covered it. Please come down.
How much longer till we get there? How much farther do we go? How much longer? How much farther? Tell me, I've just gotta know. Are we there yet? How much longer till we get there? How much farther do we go? How much longer? How much farther? Tell me, I've just gotta know. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I've just gotta know, are we there yet?
I'm so bored!
Sitting here in my car seat, sitting here in my car seat, listening to Stinky Feet over and over again. Over and over again. Over and over again. How much longer till we get there? How much farther do we go? How much longer? How much farther? Tell me, I've just gotta know. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I've just gotta know. Are we there yet? dinosaur. Sister stole my dinosaur. Said she's gonna throw it out the door. You better give it back, it's mine. You better give it back, it's mine. You better give it back, it's mine. Stay on your side, and I'd better stay on mine.
Win it.
You better not cross that line,
yeah.
Or I'm gonna tell on you, or I'm gonna tell on you, or I'm gonna tell on you. How much longer till we get there? How much farther do we go? How much longer, how much farther? Tell me, I just gotta know. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I just gotta know, are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Has anyone seen my gum? Ew!
A little bit of music from Jim Cosgrove. Mr. Stinky Feet's brother is Tom. Cosgrove will be appearing this Saturday at 7 o'clock at the Juneau Public Library downtown. Talk about stories that is nearly a normal road trip. In the studio with us now is Keith McCoy and also Shauna Strasser from Perseverance Theater, talking about the upcoming play, The Racing in the Sun. Thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having us.
So this is a classic play. Why is it a classic, Keith?
Well, because of everything that it stood for during that time period. It came out around the 50s, late 40s. It premiered in 59. But it talks about the struggling African-American family during the time. But a lot of its themes and what the play stands for holds true to any race or any nationality. And Lorraine Hansberry, you know, it was such a explosion for a woman at that time, too, to write a play like this and have it premiere on Broadway. So it was a trademark also for women at that time and for African-Americans. And it also put African-Americans in a limelight where you saw them more. They had the same struggles as everyone else. So I feel like she broke down a lot of barriers and opened up a lot of people's eyes with this play.
And she was the first African-American woman to have a Broadway production, actually, at all. And the first African-American director premiered, you know, did this show on Broadway. So that's a classic in the American theater because of that. But more because, like you said, Keith, it's a story that is for everybody. If you've ever had financial struggles, you've ever had family issues, or you've ever had any
you
of those things,
yeah.
You can relate.
Why was it chosen for the Perseverance Theater's 30th season?
Well, for a couple of different reasons. Art and Art Roach, the artistic director of the theater, and I we get together and read scripts because we're kind of script geeks. And we were reading Clybourne Park, and it's a new script, actually, the last couple of years. And it's a beautiful script about the gentrification of an area, or talking about gentrifying an area, and it's quite beautiful. Well, Raisin in the Sun is actually this family. I'm not going to give away too much because...
Give us an overview of the plot, if you could.
What's that? An overview of the plot? Yeah, so there's a family that lives in a one-bedroom place in Chicago, in the south side of Chicago, and they... there's a matriarch of the family. Keith actually plays the oldest son,
yes.
Actually the only son, and he has a sister. His character also has a wife and a son. So the matriarch has a grandson, and her husband has just died. So Keith's father, or Walter Lee's father, has just died. And there's an insurance check coming to the family for $10,000. We actually did some math. It would equal about $77,000 in current dollars right now. And so they're waiting for this check. And you want to tell them about what your character actually...
Well, my character, actually, he is dealing with coming into his own. He's 35 years old, and he's at that point in his life where dreams seem further away, and this is kind of a last chance at achieving anything that he wants to leave behind for his son to provide for his family. One of the things about the play, it deals with dreams, And everybody in this family has a dream. And what happens, we all get caught up in trying to achieve our own dream that we kind of mute everyone else's dreams to get to ours. And what it takes, I feel like, is we all have to realize, too, that in order to achieve our dreams, we need to still support each other's dreams to become one. But my character, he's dealing with not being able to achieve his dreams and not feeling like he's the man of the household. And so there's a lot of struggle going on there with him wanting to provide for his family and make some right choices. And he makes some wrong choices along the way, but I feel like the outcome is a very positive ending with him achieving something greater than the initial dream that he set out for.
Where does the title of the play come from?
Go ahead.
It comes from a poem by Langston Hughes.
And it talks about dreams deferred. It's a beautiful poem. It's a very short poem. It's actually at the beginning of the script. So when you read A Raisin in the Sun, at the very beginning, the first passage is actually the poem.
This must have caused a sensation or ruffled a few feathers, at least when it opened up in Broadway initially.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I'm sure it did. And you know, there was just actually a pretty famous remount directed by Felicia Rashad mm-hmm. of The Cosby Show, or most famously of The Cosby Show. And who was the who played Walter Lee in that?
The Broadway production that just was on stage, it was Sean P. Diddy Combs who played Walter Lee. But then you had other amazing talent. You had Audrey McDonald in it playing Ruth. Mm-hmm. You had Sanaa Lathan playing Benita, which Felicia Rashad won the Tony for playing Mama. Audrey McDonald won the Tony for playing Ruth. And Sanaa Lathan was nominated for a Tony for playing Benny. So it was an amazing cast.
A huge remount. So
speaking of the cast, who's in the cast in Juno?
Well, we have an amazing cast. I'm really excited about who's here. So locally, we have Erica Lee. She's been a Juno actress for a little bit of time. We've seen her play Billie Holiday here before, a beautiful production. She's playing Ruth. She's just amazing to watch on stage. She's just a very natural performer, just a very naturalistic, realistic, I guess is the case. Also, we have locally Ben Brown, who's playing Mr. Lindner. It's the only Caucasian in the show who actually is the person that says they try to buy, they actually buy a home. And Mr. Lindner comes in from the Neighborhood Association of Clybourne Park and says, we don't want you here. And so that's kind of where a lot of conflict comes from. It's definitely not the only one.
Right.
Let's see. Also locally, we have Lance Mitchell playing Bobo. We have Michael Patterson and DeAndre Howard King, who are playing moving men, non-speaking roles, but they come in at the end to help out. We also have, from out of town, we have Lizanne Mitchell, who's playing Mama, who I personally haven't seen a role and an actor fit so perfectly on our stage in quite a few years. And she's brilliant to watch. I mean, just every nuance is incredible. I mean, Juno will get a treat seeing
that
Keith.
That is very true. Lizanne is amazing.
Yeah. Shannon Dorsey is also here to play Benita. She's from out of town. She's lovely to watch, too. Jamil, and Jamil's last name, I'm going to mispronounce it, I'm sure. I think it's Monaghan. He's here from out of town, and Corey Spruill is here from out of town playing one of the characters also, and is that the only one?
Chris,
of course. How did I forget Chris? Chris Talley of the Talley family here in Juno is playing the younger, so Walter Lee's son, who's just 10 years old, and that's a local boy.
Tell me about your background, Keith.
Well, as I stated before, I'm from Portsmouth, Virginia. I studied theater at Norfolk State University. And the day after graduation, I went to my first professional job, and I've been going nonstop since then. I trained as a classical actor, and then I got into musical theater and dancing as well. So I kind of do a little bit of everything.
And when did this play open?
When does it open?
When did it open originally?
We just saw
1959, March 1959.
Have you done anything to change it using different sound design or different stage design to make it modern times?
No, we do it true to its text. We stick with it. We place it, I believe we place it within the early 1950s, but we stay true to everything.
Yeah, we actually hit 1951 with this one, so we did definitely stick with the time period. So you'll see period costumes, you'll see period set. It's quite lovely.
And the great thing about it, this is a timeless story. It still holds true today to anybody who has a dream, any family who's trying to achieve and grow from their status to another status. It still holds true today. And granted, it's set in the 50s. You can find messages and themes that connecting to your life today, and like I said, still hold true for today, just out of what we want from life.
Mm. Opens up tomorrow night?
That's right. We open tomorrow. We're very excited. We had a couple of previews this week that went really well. We had a preview last night, so it opens tomorrow, which is March 9th, and it runs through April 1st. And, yeah, you can get tickets by calling the theater, or you can call 463-TIXS. You can also get those tickets at the Jack or at Hearthside Books.
All right, we hope to have somebody from the theater come back and visit us again as the play's been going on a few weeks.
That would be great. We'd love to talk about it. And I just wanted to say that this is a drama. I mean, it's definitely got some comedy. I mean, it's definitely got some funny moments, but it is a great family, beautiful family drama.
What is the PG what?
I would say it's PG 11, 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few swear words, but it's actually more about following the story. You know, that would be harder. It's not, you know, it definitely doesn't have big outlandish concepts, but it's just following the story and understanding the characters.
And Keith McGoin and Shana Strasser, thank you so much for coming by the station today to talk about A Raisin in the Sun. What was up tomorrow at First Fair and Theater? How can you get tickets again?
463-TIXS, or you can give us a call at the theater or the Jack or Hearthside Books.
And thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's March the 8th, 2012. It was on this day, 1935, Thomas Wolfe's novel of Time and the River was published. His editor was Maxwell Perkins, who got the first draft, more than 1 million words, and still growing. Perkins and Wolfe met almost every day, while Perkins read through every page, red pencil in hand, slashing many of the pages from corner to corner, Wolfe arguing with these deletions, coming in with new material, which Perkins rejected. The book turned out to be 912 pages long, and Wolfe dedicated it to Perkins, and the dedication was almost 100 words long. Of Time and the River was a commercial success. It got mostly good reviews, but Thomas Wolfe was wounded by the negative ones, and he became convinced that Perkins had ruined his book. He left Perkins for a new editor 3 years later, dying of tuberculosis at the age of 37. He sent his last letter apologizing to Perkins and thanking him once again. It's the birthday of Kenneth Graham, born in Edinburgh, Scotland, 1859, raised by his grandmother in an old house in the south of England with a big attic and a garden near the River Thames and the Bisham Woods. The family had lost its fortune. Graham couldn't go to college. At the age of 19, got a job at the Bank of England. He was nostalgic for his childhood, and he collected wooden toys and stuffed animals, which filled his flat. And he wrote several books glorifying childhood, the Golden Age, Dream Days. When he was 38, still a bachelor, he met a woman named Elspeth Thompson. They married. They had a son named Alistair, who was in poor health, blind in one eye. Graham told his son bedroom stories about a character named Mr. Toad, and he wrote these stories down, collected them in a book, The Wind in the Willows. It got terrible reviews, and it became a classic. And it's the birthday of John McPhee, born Princeton, New Jersey, 1931. Journalist, written about canoes, basketball, oranges, geology, tennis, nuclear energy, the Swiss Army, and his own family tree, which he traced back to a Scotsman who moved to Ohio to become a coal miner. One of his high school English teachers required her students to write 3 compositions a week, each accompanied by a detailed outline, and McPhee still writes from an outline. He wanted to write for The New Yorker, which rejected his work for 14 years, until in 1962 he sold them a profile of a Princeton basketball player named Bill Bradley. He's published more than 25 books. His most recent collection is Silk Parachute. Here's a poem for today by William Matthews. Cheap Seats, The Cincinnati Gardens, Professional Basketball, 1959. The less we paid, the more we climbed. Tendrils of smoke lazed just as high and hung there, blue, particulate, the opposite of dew. We saw the whole court from up there. Few girls had come, few wives, numerous boys in molt, like me. Our heroes leaped and surged and looped, and two nights out of three, like us, they'd lose. But like us is wrong. We had no result, three nights out of three. So we had heroes. And we is wrong, for I knew none by name among that hazy company, unless I brought her with me. This was loneliness with noise, unlike the kind I had at home, with no clock running down and mirrors. Poem by William Matthews, Cheap Seats, The Cincinnati Gardens, Professional Basketball, 1959, from his collection Search Party, published by Houghton Mifflin, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:31, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Jennifer Klein and Dr. Andy Szabo here to talk about the Five Finger Lighthouse fundraiser, which is going on tomorrow at the Hangar Ballroom at 5:30. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So the Five Finger Lighthouse, tell me about it, if you could, Jennifer.
Five Finger Lighthouse is about 65 miles south of Juneau and 40 miles north of Petersburg. It's called Five Fingers because if you look from it from the air or from a long distance, it appears to look like the knuckles of a hand, the islands and the reefs that follow along the side there. There is one book that says it's like an angry hand reaching up to grab mariners as they pass. So we feel it's a good place for a lighthouse.
History, past, present, and future?
History, 1902, the original lighthouse was built. 1933, the wooden lighthouse burnt down. 1935, an Art Deco reinforced concrete lighthouse was built. And in 1984, the Coast Guard mothballed the lighthouse, and in 1997, Juneau Lighthouse Association took over a 30-year lease that turned into a quitclaim to the organization in 2004. So we've been working on it since 1997.
Wow. What does the light in the lighthouse consist of?
It's not a it's not the traditional Fresnel lens. From the research we've done, it looks like that was destroyed in the 33 fire. So now it's an electronic light that is powered by solar. And the light itself actually turns round and round and round all the time, but then a sensor turns on the actual, you know, light.
You're having a fundraiser tomorrow night at the Hangar Ballroom. It's starting at 5:30. What's going to be happening, Dr. Andy Szabo, with Wales?
Well, last year we started a pilot project. We spent 5 weeks out there looking at the main objective was trying to crack into the role of communication in humpback whales. They're very vocal up here in the feeding grounds, and so we're trying to understand what the whales are seeing or saying to each other out there. We took four students down from UAS last year and spent 5 weeks out there. This year we're going to have almost a dozen students from all over the U.S., Canada, and I think even Peru for 12 weeks to continue that work.
What makes it such a good place for whales?
Wow, it's an incredible place for whales. It's probably one of the highest density of humpback whales in southeast Alaska during the middle of the summer. And then the lighthouse, which is about, I think it's 18.3 meters, is the actual lighthouse platform. So you can get elevated And without disturbing the whales, you can actually watch them there and observe their behavior while simultaneously having hydrophones, underwater microphones, recording what they're saying to each other. So we have these two simultaneous data collections going on.
And you'll be making a presentation tomorrow night?
I'm not sure exactly. I would certainly want to try the wine and the vinegar, but we'll see what Jennifer has in store.
I have plans for him to chat it up with everyone.
There we go.
Yeah. So let's talk about the food and the wine.
We tried to mix it up a little bit this time. We decided that wine tasting is always great, and then I just found out yesterday, actually, that there's going to be beer tasting also. But we have the woman from Riverside Herbs coming in, and she's going to give samples of her olive oil and her balsamic vinegar, so you'll be able to taste that and purchase it if you want. And then Rainbow Foods is giving us a wonderful platter of imported cheeses, and then Wild Oven Bread is going to give us fresh baked baguettes. So it's going to be this whole thing of just rotating around our silent auction baskets, eating and drinking and talking about whales and lighthouses. So Mike Race is going to be our auctioneer, too, so that should be exciting.
And what kind of things are you going to be auctioning off?
We do those decorated silent auction baskets with donations from all the local merchants. We have Taku River Lodge flight seas and dinner. We have zip lines. We have Allen Marine whale watching. We have all kinds of spa-type baskets. We have Easter baskets with Jerry's Meat hams. We have Roy Smith giving us a bunch of locks, too. And every basket either has a bottle of wine in it or some Irish beer.
And this is all a fundraiser for the Five Finger Lighthouse. What kind of work does it take and how much money are you looking for?
We're looking for it to cover basically our basic expenses for the year, which is insurance for the boat and for the lighthouse that we have to keep. We also need fuel to run, even though we do have alternative power. It's not enough to really to run all our infrastructure down there that we need, especially with students coming down. So we'll need that. I'm hoping the minimum to keep things going would be $3,000. It sure would be nice to have that little bit of extra so that if something comes up, like problems with the solar panels or with the wind generator, that we'd have that additional money to do that. So,
are you open for business?
We are open for business. Yeah, and we're starting that with this partnership with the Alaska Whale Foundation, and we've had a few people come down. It's still sort of a self-serve bed and breakfast. You know, we're not going to be sitting there waiting on you, and it's four people to a room or, you know, in bunks. So make it almost like you have to endure the place.
And are you looking for volunteers to help paint, scrape?
We were trying to work that out. We do have a new grant right now, and that's to make the place more accessible to the public and put up some interpretive signs. So the work plan isn't put together, but we may need help putting those pre-constructed ramps and stairways together. It is time to turn around and paint the outside of the lighthouse, so if anyone wants to come down and do that, we'll give them a scraper and a paintbrush also.
Right. If people would like to donate to the Five Finger Lighthouse or the Juneau Lighthouse Association but can't make the event tomorrow night, is there a mailbox they could send it to?
P.O. Box 22163, Juneau 99802, or you can get onto our website, 5fingerlighthouse.com, and there's a PayPal. So you can do that also.
Right. That event starts tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Hangar Ballroom. You get your taste of wine, olive oil, and balsamic vinegar, and also a little bit of Alaskan beer. Anything you might want to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I'll leave with the standard. Help us keep the light on.
And thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Time is 3:41, and you are tuned to KTVO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Don with us today, and the show is Dr. Donald Steadman from England. He's giving us a preview of his talk tonight at, on ozone pollution at the University of Alaska Southeast. With us to tell us a little bit more about the workshop, the talk itself, is Lisa Hoferkamp from the university. First of all, Lisa and Donald, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So you want to talk a little bit about where the talk is going to be held tonight?
Okay, we're having this lecture tonight at the University of Alaska, the Anderson Building, which is on the Auk Bay side, next to where the old NOAA lab used to be.
And it starts at what time?
It starts at 7 p.m., and it's in Anderson 224. So you just enter from the parking lot in Anderson, and there'll be plenty of signs.
All right, Dr. Steadman. Ozone pollution, how did you discover that in the first place or get interested in it in the first place?
Well, I worked with chemistry of gases, and ozone is one of these interesting gases which was only discovered 150 years ago and was thought at the time to be something to do with good health and now turns out to be something to do with bad health. And it just has fascinating chemistry. So I've been following the chemistry of ozone as it's developed, and of course it's developed during my career.
Tell me about ozone, what it chemically consists of.
Well, everyone knows the smell of ozone if their son had an electric train. Because when that train goes along the electric train track, there are little sparks, and the sparks make ozone. So the smell of an electric train is the smell of ozone. And when it was first discovered by the same technique, it was thought to be the smell of electricity because they put sparks through air, and they had this funny smell. And it was thought to be that they really did not know what it was. It was thought to be the smell of electricity in 1840. Fascinating molecule.
Is ozone a good thing or a bad thing? People talk about the hole in the ozone layer.
Well, it's both. That's the fascinating thing. Ozone in the stratosphere, up above us, is responsible for the presence of life on the surface of the Earth. Without the ozone layer, life would have to be under at least 30 feet of water because of the ultraviolet light. Stratospheric ozone is essential to life on Earth, and removing it is a very bad idea. That was the whole spray cans and the ozone layer. However, ozone at ground level, Mexico City, Los Angeles, Sao Paulo, Denver, Houston, is a very bad thing because ozone is actually a very poisonous gas. So it's essential to life on Earth in the stratosphere and poisonous if we have to breathe it. So it's good and bad. It's a fascinating molecule.
You're talking about ozone pollution and also a little bit about the Arctic. Tell me about your work in the Arctic.
All right. Arctic is a special case, of course. There's very little ozone pollution in the Arctic. The major towns of Alaska do not have an ozone pollution problem. But if you go further north in the Arctic, there's actually ozone depletion chemistry going on. So there's some fascinating chemistry going on in which bromine compounds coming out of the snow actually remove ozone by a mechanism that is, to this day, still not very well understood and only was discovered in the last 10 years. So ozone chemistry is fascinating all over the globe. In the tropics and in big cities, it's bad ozone that is very bad for you, urban ozone in cities. In the Arctic regions, ozone is removed at ground level by fascinating new chemistry. And, of course, in the Antarctic, there's an ozone hole that if it grew really large would be dangerous, but the fact is it's sort of stuck over the Antarctic. So that's a good thing. If you're going to have an ozone hole, leave it down there.
I want to talk a little bit about the politics of ozone.
Oh, the politics of ozone. I'm going to talk a little bit about the politics of ozone this afternoon because one of the things I invented is an instrument that measures emissions from cars. And I can measure emissions from cars at about 25 cents a car. And that's a hugely political thing to do because most people measure emissions from cars at $25 to $50 a car. So I'm in the awkward position of threatening people who do expensive emission tests because I can do a very cheap emission test. And of course, when you threaten an established industry, you get nowhere for 20 years. And that's fascinating because California has this huge smog check program, $40 emission test. Smog check in California is $500 million a year program. There are 9,000 certified smog check stations. There are 21,000 certified smog check inspectors, and most of them are Republicans. You can't just turn that program off because it doesn't work. So when they found in 1993 their own data showed the program didn't work, my data, but I'm a heretic, showed the program didn't work, and instead of shutting the program off, they revised it, but it still doesn't work because it's human nature. It's not science.
Talking with Donald Steadman, who's going to be giving a talk tonight at the University of Alaska Southeast. Lisa, if you want to give us the details on that discussion, please.
He'll be talking at the Anderson Building, the University of Alaska, Southeast, room 204, and we'll talk about ozone and its politics and chemistry to some degree. It's a lecture for the general public.
Is there a website you want to direct people to?
Yes, there is. It's www.feet, F-E-A-T, the Fuel Efficiency Automobile Test, www.feet.du, which is the University of Denver, .edu, which is good old educational. So www.feat.du.edu, and you'll find out more about mobile source emissions and tropospheric ozone than you would ever want.
Dr. Sedman and Lisa Hoberkamp, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Time is 3:49, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. You can tune into the Alaska Identity Project tonight, where host Adrian Lopez will be talking to Amy Gulick, professional photographer and author of Salmon in the Trees. Also, she'll be talking to Lori Hagee, the 2011 Alaska Teacher of the Year from Glacier Valley Elementary School. It's going on tonight at 7 o'clock here on KTUO News.
Arts Up on K2 is supported in part by the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Anthony Turner, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of stuff going on?
There is, the usual, you know. In 2 weeks, it's going to be really busy. Our poster hangers went out with a record number of posters, yes, on Tuesday. So in 2 weeks, we won't have time. We better schedule a half hour. At least. But anyway, this week, on Thursday, this week you got a lot of things that are coming to an end, and if you wanted to see them, you better get to them. Among those things is this elementary school art show. This is its last weekend out at the Nugget Mall. We have also Lion in Winter closes this weekend. It will run through, I believe, Sunday. We don't have any more tickets for Saturday or Sunday over at the Jack. I think they may have some at the bookstores. Rusalka ends this weekend, so if you wanted to see that, and I highly recommend both of those things. I really enjoyed both of them. Rusalka runs Friday and Saturday. So schedule your theater watching accordingly, people. Okay. 6 o'clock tonight, a wild and scenic film festival. The Juneau Watershed Project is showing films over at the Jack. There's some stuff for kids to begin with, and you can get your tickets at the door. Again, it starts at 6. At 6:30, there's a library open house. They're going to talk about internet safety. This is free. It's at the downtown library. Pavitz is offering an intro to weight training for women at 6:30 out at the Pavitt Fitness Center. Goldtown Nickelodeon is showing the film On the Ice, which was filmed in Barrow by folks from Barrow, and it is an amazing film. It's running this weekend, and I believe the artist may be in town for it. I'm not sure. So that starts this evening at 7. Tomorrow at noon, Skip Wallen will be over at the Jack. Bring your lunch and visit with him about where he is on the Whale Project. He's got some films, and it's a pretty amazing thing. So stop in at noon. 4 p.m. on Friday at the Canvas, the second Friday hip-hop class. And I want to just say, if you're a hip-hop fan, we're bringing Thotos Dance Chicago. It's a modern dance troupe, but they are offering a hip-hop workshop one of the nights before their performance out at the Racket Club in the Valley. That will be on April 6th, I think is the date, but give me a call if you're interested in that. It's the Southeast Alaska Regional Science Fair this weekend. It's out at Thunder Mountain High School, 5 p.m. on Friday, and again around noon on Saturday. The public's invited to come and look at the science exhibits. It's the 26th annual Tanakee Springs Fireman's Ball, and I think the ferry just left, but you could probably fly over there. $10 includes a spaghetti dinner. You can get more information about this at 736-2211. Tanakee's always fun. Now, for some reason, there's something happening at 508, and I'm trying to decide if this is just a recognition that most Junoites come to things about 5 to 10 minutes late, or if it's a typo, or if KXLL has just got sort of an odd thing, so that you will remember to come to Glitters, the all-ages part of the event. It's a art and music and all sorts of things going on. Sarah Conroe, Ed Littlefield, and Glitter all over the place at the Jack, 5:08 tomorrow. And it's followed later in the evening at 9:27 by Glitters for the 21-plus crowd with music by Tiger Pilot and Playboy Spaceman. I think they're suggesting a $5 donation for these things. I believe a large piece of artwork will end up out of it that's going to go on the wall of the K2 building. Am I correct in that?
I think so.
All righty then.
Lots of glitter.
I hope you like glitter, you know. Lou over at Lucid Reverie told me that glitter comes from the skin of devils. I don't think he likes it so much. But anyway, also at 5:30, Five Finger Lighthouse is having, the Juneau Lighthouse Association is trying to make Five Finger Lighthouse accessible to Junoites. They're having a wine, olive oil, and vinegar tasting. I hope they don't get those confused. It's over at the Hangar, and it is $20 at the door. You can get more information, 209-4280. Salmon in the Trees, Amy Gulick is the featured speaker at the Fireside Lecture, 6:30 and 8 p.m. out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. That's free. 7 p.m. is On the Ice, and Dan Hobson is playing classical guitar this weekend at the Gold Room at the Baranoff. 7 p.m. both Friday and Saturday night. So you have Raisin in the Sun opening at Perseverance Theater. We are this is such a treat to have this here. As Art said, it's not very common that we would have enough actors that could pull this one off. And this is just don't miss this one. Again, it's one of those things where you think, oh, I have until April 1st. Well, those days go by quickly, so get your tickets now. They will be taking this this production up to Anchorage mid-April, so if you happen to be up there, you can catch it too. Also, a brand new theater is opening, Sunshine. Its opening night is also on Friday at 7:30. This is Theater at Latitude 58. They will be performing upstairs from the Juneau Urgent Care on Old Dairy Road. This is Cinnamon Simpson, who was formerly with the Northern Light Junior Theater. And this is a musical theater in one act. So try to check that one out. It's 957-0534 for more information about that. Again, you can see Lion in Winter and Rusalka on Friday. The Great Alaska Bluegrass Band is over at the Douglas Inn, and also known as Louie's, at 9:30 on Friday night. Saturday morning, there's a big garage sale over at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium to benefit Juno Douglas High School activities. 10:30 in the morning, John Hyde will be up at the Coffee and Collections talking about photographing Juno. It's free, and admission is free to the City Museum all this month, thanks to Bob and Michelle Storer, which is really a nice gift to the community. Friends of Admiralty Island will be having their annual meeting and a whole bunch of really terrific speakers. It starts at 2 p.m. It's over at the Jack. The lineup includes John Straley and Skip Wallen and just a whole bunch of Hank Lechner, the Sandhill train guy, all kinds of people over there. There's a bike clinic over at Cycle Alaska to talk about the Kluane bike relay. That's at 3 p.m. 4:30, you could go play Bunko for breast cancer research at the Clinkett Haida Center. There is a Saturday night swing at the Rookery at 6 p.m. I don't know if they're dancing on the tables or what's going on over there, but they'll have lessons from 6 until 8 and then open dancing until 10 p.m. That's at the Rookery. There's a ballroom dance also that the Juno International Folk Dancers are doing. Pat Bellick will be teaching the New York Hustle. This is out at the UAS Student Activity Center. That's at 7 p.m. Also at 7 p.m., Tom Cosgrove will be telling the story of a nearly normal road trip. This is at the Downtown Library. It says it's PG-8, so I don't know what went on this road trip, but it sounds like it was nearly normal anyway. Free, that's at the library. 7:30, you got Rusalka, Lion in Winter, Raisin in Sun and Sunshine, and the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band at 9:30. On Sunday, it's Spring Forward. So don't forget that part.
It's this Sunday?
That's this Sunday. Daylight savings time. I never can figure out what happened to the daylight before we were saving it, but oh well. At 1:30, from 1:30 to 6, it's the 2012 High Gravity Games up at Eagle Crest. It's a fundraiser for the Red Cross. It's sponsored by Marlon Tini's, the Alaskan Brewing, and the Juno Ski Club. They have keg tossing and all sorts of fun things going on up there, so don't miss that. At 2 p.m., it's The Lion in Winter. It's their last show. 3 p.m., Brett Crawford, a local tenor, will be singing, offering a recital, some of his favorites. This is offered by the Juno Lyric Opera at the Northern Light Junior Theater. And it sounds that there's a free family movie at the Douglas Public Library. And I guess the rest of it, if you want to find out about it, you're going to have to go to our website because there's too much going on.
Anthony Journey, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And it's just about 4 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. Let's broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Lock Bay area, tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, here KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up at 4 o'clock, coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. Have a good evening.